Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring data quality, reliability, and validity. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. To help unpack all of these concepts for you today, I'm joined by our expert.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So before we really dive into the mechanics of all this, I want to set the stakes for you because, I mean, imagine a scenario where I told you that the decision to deny your last bank loan or, you know, maybe the reason your resume was automatically rejected for a job.
Oh, yeah. The automated rejections.
Right. If I told you that was decided by an algorithm that was just looking at some incomplete spreadsheet from like 2018, you'd probably be furious.
Oh, absolutely. You'd think the whole system was just completely rigged against you.
Exactly. But as the information we're looking at today reveals, that sort of thing happens all the time. I feel like people treat the term data-driven like it's this magical shield against making mistakes.
Yeah, which is a really, really dangerous assumption. We tend to believe that data is inherently objective. Like, it's just numbers, right? Math doesn't lie.
Right.
But the foundational premise we have to establish here is that in a modern digital landscape, you cannot separate the quality of the decision from the quality of the data that's informing it.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So whether it's a successful career move or a brilliant marketing campaign or just a crucial pivot in business strategy, it entirely depends on whether the underlying information is accurate, consistent, complete, and actually trustworthy.
So if it's not, you aren't actually being data-driven. You're just driving blindfolded.
Driving blindfolded. Yeah. That is a very real way to frame it because the materials make it incredibly clear.
Mm.
I mean, poor quality data leads directly to weak analysis, and that weak analysis generates inaccurate conclusions and misleading insights and ultimately just poor decision-making at every single level.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, you know, high-quality data gives an organization real reliability, confidence, and accuracy.
Okay, so we really need to figure out what good data actually looks like in practice. Because, you know, good is a pretty subjective word. How do we actually measure that?
Well, we look at what are known as the big three core concepts.
Okay.
That's data quality, reliability, and validity. Let's begin with data quality since that kind of serves as the overarching umbrella here.
Got it.
For a data set to be considered high quality, it has to meet three conditions. It has to be accurate. It has to be complete, and it has to be relevant to the specific problem you're trying to solve.
Right. So accuracy is straightforward. Like, are the numbers actually correct? And completeness means we aren't just looking at, say, a convenient slice of the pie.
Exactly. You need the whole picture.
And then relevance means the information actually applies to what you're doing. Like, I mean, I could have perfectly accurate and totally complete data about the migration patterns of Canadian geese.
Right.
But if I'm trying to forecast smartphone sales in Tokyo, is completely irrelevant.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But hitting those marks is really just the baseline.
Hmm.
The second core concept is reliability. Think of reliability as consistency over time.
Okay, consistency.
Yeah, so if you run the same query or you conduct the same test under the exact same conditions, reliable data produces the same answer today, tomorrow, and next week. It doesn't fluctuate wildly unless there's a structural reason for it to do so.
So it's dependable.
Dependable, yes.
Yeah.
And then we hit the third piece, which is honestly usually where things fall apart out in the real world, and that is validity.
Validity.
Wow. Valid data measures exactly what it is intended to measure. Nothing more, nothing less.
You know, I want to pause on that real quick because reliability and validity, they sound incredibly similar to a lot of people.
They do.
But mixing them up is like where disaster strikes. Let me try an analogy here to help you visualize the difference.
Go for it.
So think of a broken bathroom scale. The spring inside is just totally jammed. Now, if I step on that scale 5 times in a row and it says I weigh exactly 10 pounds every single time, that scale is highly reliable.
Because the results are incredibly consistent.
Right. But obviously, unless I'm a small dog, it is not measuring my actual weight.
Right. So it has absolutely no validity.
Exactly. It's not measuring what it claims to measure. And therefore, the overall data quality is fundamentally terrible, even though it is perfectly reliable.
That analogy highlights the danger perfectly. And think about the broader implications of using that kind of broken scale data.
Oh, yeah.
In a digital workplace, if a company uses reliable but invalid data to, say, track user engagement, they might think they're doing incredibly well.
They see the numbers going up and get excited.
Right. They might secure funding. They might hire more staff, double down on their strategy. But if the metric they are tracking doesn't actually reflect real user satisfaction, like if it's just measuring how many times a user accidentally clicked a confusing button,
oh wow,
then they are basically navigating a city using a map from 1950.
Right. So the engine is running great, you're making excellent time, but the map is telling you to drive straight into a river.
Yes. You thought you were being data-driven because your numbers were so reliable. But because they lacked validity, your entire action plan was compromised from the start.
Okay, so if we aren't stepping on a physical scale, how do we spot this bad data out in the wild? Because if I'm navigating a city, I can look out the window and see the river. The error is obvious.
Right.
But a massive spreadsheet doesn't usually come with a warning label that says, hey, I'm a broken scale.
No, it definitely doesn't. And this is where we transition from theory to practical digital insight. You know, you cannot be a passive consumer of information. You really have to actively interrogate it.
Interrogate it. I like that.
Yeah. And there are four key strategies for doing this that we pulled from the materials. The first is to check for missing information.
Which goes back to completeness.
Exactly. When you look at a data set, the most important question is often, what is not here?
Which is incredibly difficult. I mean, it is so much harder to notice an absence than a presence.
It really is. It requires training your brain to actively look for gaps.
Right.
Like whose voices aren't represented, what time period is skipped.
Give me an example of that.
Sure. If you're analyzing customer complaints, but your database only captures feedback from people who called a phone line during standard business hours.
Oh, right.
Then you are entirely missing the demographic of users who only communicate via email or social media late at night. The data is incomplete, which totally skews your perspective.
Okay, so strategy one is finding the invisible gaps. What is strategy two?
Verify consistency across different sources. You should never rely on a single point of failure.
Makes sense.
If your marketing dashboard shows a massive spike in product interest and clicks, but your sales revenue records show absolutely zero increase in actual purchases, well, you have a glaring inconsistency.
So you can't just pick the dashboard that makes your department look good and present that to the boss.
Exactly.
You have to cross-reference and figure out why the clicks aren't translating to sales.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the ad link is just broken.
Right, exactly. You have to verify. Then strategy three addresses validity, head-on review, exactly how the data was collected.
Okay.
If a software company wants to know if their new app interface is intuitive and their collection method involves asking the five engineers who built the app.
Well, the method is hopelessly flawed,
right,
because you aren't measuring user experience at that point. You're measuring the pride of the engineers who designed it. I mean, they already know how it works.
Exactly. You have to ask, you know, was the survey question leading? Was the environment controlled? Was the sample size actually large enough?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, strategy four, evaluate whether the final conclusions actually match the evidence presented.
Oh, this is the classic correlation does not equal causation trap, right?
Yes, exactly that.
Like, noticing that ice cream sales and shark attacks both go up in July, and concluding that eating ice cream attracts sharks.
A perfect example.
Yeah.
I mean, the data itself might be completely fine. The ice cream numbers are accurate. The shark attack numbers are totally reliable.
Right.
But the person presenting the data takes a massive logical leap to draw a conclusion that the evidence simply does not support. Both just happen to increase during the summer when people go to the beach.
Yeah. You know, to bring this out of the theoretical realm, there is a fantastic real-world case study from the materials we should look at.
Oh, the student research one.
Yeah. A university student was conducting research and almost made a catastrophic error. They had their data set, they ran their models, and they were all ready to write up their final findings.
Right.
But they decided to pause and run through these specific strategies.
And what did they uncover when they actually looked closer?
They realized their data set was entirely outdated. It was completely missing key information from recent years.
Wow.
I mean, imagine if someone today was doing an analysis on the permanence of remote work, but they didn't realize their data set ended in 2019.
That would be a disaster.
By pausing to check for missing info and reviewing the collection timeline, the student avoided publishing wildly inaccurate conclusions.
And that moment of pause is everything.
Mm.
It is just so easy to fall into the cognitive trap of assuming that because data is presented in a clean format, it just must be correct.
I call it the spreadsheet illusion.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a very real bias. You get a file. It has neat little rows and columns. The headers are bolded. The cells are color-coded. Maybe there's a nice pivot table.
It looks official.
Right. It gives off this aura of absolute authority. But this case study proves why you have to look under the hood. because a beautifully formatted spreadsheet can still just be a broken scale. But let me play devil's advocate here for a second. I want to translate this to a young professional entering the future workplace.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's say I'm stepping into a new role as a junior analyst tomorrow. My manager hands me a massive data set, we're talking tens of thousands of rows, and says, I need a strategy recommendation for the next quarter by 3 p.m.
A very realistic scenario.
Right. I don't have the time to manually audit every single cell for missing information or consistency. So how is this level of scrutiny actually practical?
Well, the stakes in that moment are incredibly high. If you succumb to this spreadsheet illusion and you just accept poor quality data because you are rushed and you run your analysis, you will present misleading insights to leadership.
Which is bad.
Very bad. If leadership acts on those insights, the company could lose millions or jobs could be impacted. But you are right. You cannot do this manually.
So what is the play then?
The modern professional doesn't just read data, they manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
You are expected to use specific digital platforms like Google Sheets, Microsoft Excel, and OpenRefine. These aren't just digital filing cabinets.
Mm.
They're the exact platforms you use to actively execute those four strategies we talked about, but at scale.
Break that down for me. How does a tool actually do the detective work?
Well, let's say you are looking for consistency and accuracy. In Excel or Google Sheets, you don't read every line. You use conditional formatting.
To highlight things.
Exactly. To instantly highlight duplicate entries or massive statistical outliers. You use pivot tables to summarize thousands of rows into a single view.
Oh, so you can immediately see if a certain region or time period is blank.
Right, which covers your check for missing information in seconds.
Well, okay, and what about OpenRefine? I know that's a powerful tool for working with messy data, but what is the actual mechanism there?
Think of OpenRefine like a digital spell checker for concepts.
Spell checker for concepts. Okay.
Let's say you are analyzing a global customer database and different salespeople enter the data. One typed NYC, another typed New York, another typed NY, and someone else typed New York with no space.
A nightmare.
A total nightmare. A basic system thinks those are four completely different cities, which destroys your validity. But OpenRefine uses clustering algorithms.
To do what?
To instantly identify that those variations all mean the exact same thing. It groups them together and standardizes them for you.
So you basically fix a massive validity error across 10,000 rows with just a few clicks.
Exactly. You use these tools to verify consistency, check for missing info, and build confidence in the data before you ever attempt to draw a conclusion.
That is so powerful.
It is. Because high quality data improves accuracy and organizational confidence. When you stand up in that 3 p.m. meeting and say, here's our strategy, you want to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that your foundation is solid.
Right.
Catching those errors before they reach leadership makes you an invaluable asset in any workplace.
You know, looking at all of this, there is an underlying theme that really stopped me in my tracks when I was reviewing the materials. Catching errors isn't just about looking smart to your boss or saving the company money or being efficient. There is a deep ethical obligation here.
The implications go far beyond profit margins, yes.
Yeah. The core question we have to reflect on is, why is data quality important for making fair and accurate decisions? We've talked a lot about the mechanics of accuracy, but fairness introduces a real human element.
Fairness is the ethical core of this entire subject. If your data is incomplete or if it lacks validity, any algorithm, any corporate policy, or any business decision based on it will inherently be unfair.
Can you give me an example of how that plays out organically?
Yeah. Let's go back to the idea of an algorithm determining who gets approved for a mortgage.
Okay.
The math inside the algorithm isn't biased. It just calculates based on the inputs it's given.
Oh, math doesn't lie.
But if the historical data fed into that algorithm is incomplete, say, if it heavily excludes certain demographics because of discriminatory banking practices from decades ago, then the data lacks validity.
It's a broken scale.
Yes. The algorithm learns from a broken scale. And now, in the present day, that system mathematically enforces historical bias. It automatically denies people housing or business opportunities based on flawed data.
Wow. So responsible tech use means understanding that these numbers impact real human lives.
Absolutely.
You have to question the assumptions baked into the spreadsheet. You have to ensure that the data being used to impact real people actually measures what it is supposed to measure.
Exactly.
So how do we take these vital concepts, accuracy, reliability, validity, fairness, and turn them into a daily habit? Because, I mean, if we just listen to this and think, wow, that's interesting, but then go back to trusting every chart we see tomorrow, we haven't actually grown.
Right. Building a daily reflex is the most crucial part of this whole learning process.
Yeah.
Basically, every single time you look at a new chart or a dashboard or a data set, you should run a rapid mental checklist.
Like a reflex.
Exactly. Think of it like checking your mirrors before you back out of a driveway.
What are we checking in those digital mirrors?
Completeness, accuracy, consistency, and reliability.
Mm.
Just a quick mental scan.
Okay.
Is anything obviously missing? Do the numbers seem correct based on common sense? Do they align with other metrics I know to be true? And is this a valid measurement of the actual goal?
I love the idea of digital mirrors, but I want to add a crucial caveat here for everyone listening.
Oh, definitely.
The goal here is not to become completely paranoid. We don't want you to freeze up, trust absolutely nothing, and refuse to make decisions. The goal is to prioritize curiosity over fear.
That is the perfect distinction. Curiosity over fear.
You're just asking, you know, how was this made? What story is the author trying to tell me? And did they bring the right evidence to support it?
And if you want to nurture that curiosity and really build this critical thinking muscle, there are three specific books recommended in our source materials that are just absolutely essential reading for anyone navigating the future workplace.
Let's hear them.
They are The Art of Statistics, How to Lie with Statistics, and Data Smart.
A title like How to Lie with Statistics perfectly captures the essence of everything we've discussed today.
It really does.
It highlights why understanding validity and reliability is your absolute best defense against being misled. People can and will use highly reliable numbers to tell a story that simply isn't true.
All the time.
But if you know how the trick is done, if you know how to look for the missing data and the logical leaps, you can't be fooled.
All three of those books demystify the illusion. Combined with practicing on tools like Excel and OpenRefine, they really equip you to handle the complexities of the modern information landscape.
As we bring this conversation to a close, let's just look back at the journey we've taken today. We've moved from the abstract definitions of good data, explored the tools needed to manipulate it, and confronted the ethical obligations of using it fairly.
And to concisely reiterate our key takeaways,
yeah.
Data quality completely dictates decision quality.
Yes.
Reliable data gives you consistency over time. Validity ensures you are actually measuring what matters, and poor quality data will always weaken your conclusions.
Before we go, consider this. We leave a massive trail of data everywhere we go. Every time you use your smartwatch, browse the internet, or swipe your credit card, you're generating thousands of data points.
True.
If data quality dictates decision quality, what kind of decisions are massive companies making about you right now based on broken scales? Something to think about.
A very slightly terrifying thought, but an important one.
As you move forward in your digital life, we encourage you to stay curious, stay responsible, and remain future ready. Don't be afraid of the numbers, but never stop asking the hard questions about where they came from. Be sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock these concepts in.
And as a final reminder, we highly recommend checking out the reference materials we discussed today, The Art of Statistics, How to Lie with Statistics, and Data Smart. Thank you for joining us. It has been a genuine pleasure exploring these vital concepts with you.
A huge thank you from me as well. Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.